I just can't believe they haven't changed the name from Aid Station yet.
It needs to be the Hydration IV Station, otherwise known as the HIV Station. Oh, are we recording?
Yeah.
howdy, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Texish, the show about some things Texas.
And some things long pause.
Tito's and Shiner, gonna be an all-nighter. Just might find her at the Whataburger line. Dance halls and women, but man, I'm wishing that I was fishing by the river tonight in Texas.
We've got a great episode in store for you today, but first, as always, your favorite segment.
And ours.
Our not sponsors. Seth, who is our first not sponsor for today's episode?
Our first not sponsor for today's episode is Braces.
Braces!
Did you expect to have a great middle school year?
Braces!
Did you expect to have a really good, like, picture so you could show off to your friends and your family?
Braces!
Did you expect to maybe have your first girlfriend and get a kiss this year?
Braces! Did you really think your breath was ever going to smell good with 1,000 pounds of metal in your mouth? Braces! And why not have your first kiss just get hooked like a fish on the other chick?
Braces. Nothing is better for a kid than getting their mouth sliced and diced by the latest medical grade equipment.
Braces. And nothing is better than some Italian guy, orthodontist with his gold chain hitting your face, just tweaking and pulling and tweaking and pulling and tightening and tightening.
Braces.
It's the
Spanish Inquisition of the 21st century. It's braces.
What was the Spanish Inquisition?
The Spanish Inquisition was a time whenever, like, the Catholic Church was basically torturing people. I mean, like, long story short, cool. they would just, like, take people and be like, hey, are you a witch? And they'd be like, no, I'm not. And they're like, I'm going to torture
it's
you now.
It's weird how when it comes to, like, hey, then, do you bone little boys? Yeah. Yes. Oh, you're good.
Oh, you're fine.
Anyway.
Basically, they just put braces on them.
Got it. Nice. Oh, I hate braces so much. Oh, you just, I got, like, PTSD.
I know, gross. Right? Isn't that weird?
Oh, I hate it. And there was the chick, the orthodontist assistant at our orthodontist who also had braces. Yeah. And adults with braces are a whole different vibe.
Dude, adults with braces are gangster. Because basically, they're saying, I value the next, you know, my vision for life starts in 2 years.
Yeah.
I am working on myself.
For sure.
An adult with braces is a gangster. I mad respect to adults
sure.
with braces.
Lose weight, then get braces would be my thought, but sure.
I mean, you can do both. Here's the thing. If you have braces, you're going to lose weight.
Wait, good call. Wait, let's just put braces on all the fat people.
Oh my God. And just tighten them every now and again so they can't eat.
Every week. Just
wow. We just solved the obesity epidemic.
We just solved the plus size problem.
You're welcome, government.
That's going to be I can't wait for Daily Wire's next documentary, The Plus Size Problem.
By Matt Walsh.
What is a woman?
What is a fat person?
What is a fat person?
I've eaten a Twinkie. Am I a fat person?
Braces.
I don't know.
Who's our other not sponsor?
Our other not sponsor
for today's episode of Texish is Mexican Martinis.
Mexican Martinis.
I don't want to work tomorrow.
Mexican Martinis.
Shaken, stirred. I don't care. It's Cinco de Mayo.
Mexican Martinis.
I used to have responsibilities.
Mexican Martinis. They work twice as hard as regular martinis.
Mexican Martinis. They can turn any gathering into a bachelorette party in about half an hour.
Mexican Martinis. It turns everything into a pinata if you try hard enough.
Mexican Martinis. It's a fiesta.
Mexican Martinis.
Followed by a siesta.
Mexican Martinis.
I like how it's like an adult milkshake, because when you're a kid, you get a milkshake and they would give you the extra.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
It is the best feeling.
There
in the
is
world.
Nothing about more ice cream that is going to prevent you from operating a vehicle.
Never going to turn down that extra cup of ice cream.
It's crazy that with a Mexican martini, they're like, here's the rest of it. I know that that's a lot, but also,
I know you ordered one drink. Here's an extra.
Here's
half
five.
Because you're going to be a problem.
Yeah, like this is going to be a fun night for you for about 2 hours.
I do like how the person who orders the Mexican martini is obviously the issue.
Yeah, a little bit.
And they never know they are.
Yeah, I remember what was your first experience with a Mexican martini?
Whew. This is post-college in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Mexican martinis at like a little Mexican place we used to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Partially because you would run into like movie stars there.
Yeah.
They would do mm-hmm. takeout and whatever. So it was fun yeah. to just like people watch.
Yeah.
Celebrity and, watch. Right. Celebrity watch. They aren't people.
They're not.
And there was a group of like it was like a 40-year-old birthday party, probably yeah. a group of women celebrating turning mm-hmm. 40. They all had Mexican martinis.
I'm for the table. If I get 40. Some if I get some Mexican martinis, will you have some? Will you everybody
let's
have
be
some?
Naughty.
Let's be naughty. Naughty. Let's be naughty. And naughty turned into naughty.
Naughty. Oh like, my gosh. Naughty turned we into nodding off.
We progressively watched this table of I'm sure respectable business women get sloppier and sloppier yeah. over the course of 2 to 3 Mexican martinis to the point where the poor waiter who barely spoke English had to be like, no more.
No more. No mas.
They're like, one more round for the... He was like, nope, no. Definitely not happening.
Yeah, Mexican martinis are like if Six Flags made a drink.
Yeah.
If Six Flags was told, make a cocktail, that's what they would make.
Mexican martini is like if Cedar Point made a cocktail.
Sure. Mexican martini is like if El Chapo was really tired.
Right.
And needed like an up and downer at the same
Mexican
time.
Mexican martinis are like if you want cocaine, but you can't find it or afford it.
Yeah.
You just have a Mexican
martini. I honestly don't know how Mateo Lane mm-hmm. has not branded himself the Mexican martini.
Because he's Italian?
Well, he's half Mexican.
That's true.
He's half Mexican, half... I think he's actually half Irish.
Maybe.
Or maybe half Italian. But...
I mean, that's fair.
That's free for him. I you think know, it'd be awesome if he was
look,
like...
Look in the camera and just give it to him.
Mateo Lane, please, just one tour or one show. Just say, I'm the Mexican martini.
There you go.
Like, I just think it works. Right,
fair enough, yeah. fair enough.
So, yeah. just throwing that out there. Speaking of Mexican martini, you want to hear about what happened one time in Texas history?
I like that segue.
Once upon a time!
When was it?
When was it? It was 1952.
Nice.
And... Matt's El Rancho here in Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. home of the famous Mexican martini,
mm-hmm.
opened its doors for the very first time. And the family that opened Matt's El Rancho had actually been in Austin, Texas for about like 80 years at that point. So they were like first generation Austinites, so to speak, as far as like that family had been in the area for a couple generations. And the grandfather would sell tamales and pralines at the Austin State Capitol on a push cart.
Mm-hmm.
Two generations later, his great-great-grandson decided, what if we made this a whole restaurant? And thus,
Matt's El Rancho
was opened. And now, if you have a party of 20 here in Austin, yeah. Texas, you know there's one place that you can go.
Matt's El Rancho. So. That's where you go if you want enchiladas and to get absolutely trashed right after.
Yeah, well, it's also where you go if you want to get enchiladas and just end up absolutely trashed. Because back to Mexican martinis, I didn't know
yeah.
how potent those things were.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I went to Matt's El Rancho.
Yeah, paint me a word story.
Was that sarcastic or...
What? No.
You actually want to hear the story.
Yeah, story.
I thought that was a weird underhanded, like, I don't care. I thought that was a passive, like, I don't want to hear your story.
No, if I don't want to hear your story, I'll just tell you.
Okay, cool. So, went to Matt's El Rancho, and my friend says, dude, they have these cool drinks called the Mexican Martini. It's like a margarita, but in a martini glass.
Yeah.
Cool. And then the thing happens where here's the martini glass, and also here's five other...
Martinis in the shaker.
In the thing. Cool. Drink one of those. I'm like, that was just one drink.
Right. One.
The psychology is yeah. messed up there because yeah. you really do drink that whole thing and think, well, yeah. that was just well, one. Three later.
Right.
I'm calling my roommate.
Which is like six drinks.
Yeah. I'm calling my roommate and apparently I'm saying, will you please pick me up and take me to P. Terry's?
You have a pattern.
I really do. And so my roommate had to pick me up. We drive through P. Terry's. I got three double doubles and fell asleep in the passenger seat halfway through eating one.
That sounds about right.
I love Matt's El Rancho.
That's why you and Christian get along so well.
Probably. Is that what he does? Is that kind of his similar, MO?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That was fun.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love Matt's El Rancho. Man. If you're in Austin, Texas.
Yeah. If you're in Austin, Texas, and you're planning on going out on E6, go ahead and go to Matt's El Rancho. Lay down a nice base layer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, if you're in Austin and you're going to E6, go to Tamale House.
Well, agreed.
Because that's over there, whereas Matt's El Rancho is
So. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. What were you thinking of?
I was thinking of Tamale House.
Or Joe's.
I was thinking of Tamale. I got the
two. Joe's Tamale House. Joe's El Tamale House.
Joe's Tamale Ranch.
Where, so, yeah, 1952 was the year that Matt's El Rancho officially opened its doors.
Hey, shout out Matt's El Rancho.
Shouts out Matt's El Rancho.
Feeding UT students and their parents since 1957.
That's such a good point. Yeah. And like the UT parent that's like, I used to come here I used to come here when I was in college
with their cig up,
and their branded calf. Boop. Just beep, so good. And they're like, make some martini, please. One Mateo Lane, please. Anyway, so
whenever we open a bar, we're gonna call the Mexican Martini the Mateo Lane.
Yeah, thank you. I think it'd be fun. I think he would like that. I could be wrong. He could be horrifically offended.
Based on our shorts game alone, I think he would come on the podcast.
True. Oh, he would come on to the podcast. Right. Got it. Yeah. Anyway, so do you want to hear about our small town of the week?
Where is it?
Small town of the week. So our small town of the week is...
We're getting pretty good at the timing.
I know.
We're getting good at the timing. Yeah, yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4. Where is it? The small town of the week is Hillsboro, Texas.
Hillsboro.
Population about 8,200.
Cool.
Founded as the county seat of Hill County in around, it was 1903, 1905.
Sure.
Two pretty significant things have occurred in this tiny little town of Hillsboro, Texas. Mm-hmm. Number one, one of Bonnie and Clyde's first criminal activities that they did together was they went to the Anderson farm after they had robbed the bank in Hillsboro. And this is back when, even in Dallas, there was one bank. Right. There weren't multiple banks in towns. There was just the bank.
The bank.
So they rob the Hillsboro bank, go to the Anderson farm, and they held these farmers at gunpoint for 3 days straight.
Nice.
While there was a police chase for them. So they just were in Hillsboro pointing a Tommy gun at a harmless family for 3 days straight. So that happened. And then the second thing that happened was the courthouse in Hillsboro is one of the very classic old Texas courthouses. And it was actually viewed as one of the like top five, top three most beautiful historic courthouses in Texas. But in 1992, a electrical wiring malfunction caused a fire and almost burned it down. So then Willie Nelson, who was born in Hillsboro, paid to renovate and fix like the entire courthouse, which actually sparked the movement where all of these small towns and like smaller cities in Texas like renovated
their courthouses
so that they were more museums or just like not going to catch on fire randomly because their wiring was from the 1930s. Willie Nelson paid to fix that, but also started this movement that moved across Texas where all of these small little towns that JB Sauceda's roasting on his Texas Humor Fire started that thing where now when you go to most small towns, you'll notice that the most beautiful building is the courthouse, partially because the rest of the town is defunct, but
no railroad.
No railroad and just no economy anyway. Those those are the two significant things that have come out of Hillsboro, Texas.
Okay, like it. Yeah.
Hillsboro, baby.
Well, three significant things. Willie Nelson.
Do you like Willie Nelson? Like actually
Willie Nelson?
Yeah.
I like the idea of Willie Nelson.
Do you think that's most people?
I think that's most people.
At this point.
There are some songs that he sings on that I do genuinely love. Mm-hmm. Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain is a great song.
Yeah.
Hello Walls is a great song. Yeah. Like, he's got some great songs.
For sure.
Could not name 10.
And how many people do you think could name 10?
It depends on their age.
Yeah. Under 30.
Ooh, very small, like 2%.
Over 40.
10%.
90.
100%.
Of course, or have they forgotten?
They could also...
Yeah, there's a little bit of
dementia, so like 90%.
They're going to start saying Conway Twitty songs are Willie Nelson songs.
Well, there was that point where Willie Nelson kind of was Conway Twitty.
He did sort of...
That was one of the funniest parts of going to the... Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is like you see all these different people and their stories, and Willie Nelson starts off as this like very buttoned up cowboy hat, no beard, short hair, singing like Hank Williams song, you know, that type
singing
of music. Conway Twitty songs.
Hello, darling.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice to see ya.
Hello, Walt. How are you today?
How are you today?
Anyway, which is a far cry from the Willie Nelson we know today.
Yeah.
Weed smoking, pigtail wearing, you know, rebel he is. So yeah, I just think it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I also, here's one of the things I love about Willie Nelson. As like,
apart from
everything, I don't know a single song. Like from a music standpoint, I can't say I'm a fan because I have never gotten on.
Know.
I've never got on Spotify and thought I'm gonna listen to Willie Nelson right now.
Right.
But I think it's really cool that he's kind of the opposite of what Texans are typically portrayed as, but he still represents Texas. Like he hasn't gone the route of I'm nothing like Texans and therefore screw Texas. He's right. Like, I love Texas. Like,
I love Texas.
I rebuild courthouses. Yeah. And the weed's great.
Well, and what I like is that Texans who are like very much the opposite of him still love him. Mm-hmm. You know? You can't fault them.
You know what? Willie Nelson for president.
Willie Nelson for Mr. Yeah. President.
I mean, he's only like a year older than our current president, so it's not like the age thing is going to be an issue.
There you go.
Yeah. Dude, him and Woody Harrelson.
That would be a great ticket.
That would be that amazing. That would be an amazing Matthew ticket. McConaughey is the campaign manager.
Right. He would have to be.
Whoa. It'd Renee Zellweger opens up every single...
I
just want
to see that movie. Yeah. I don't want it to happen.
Actually,
I do want
Writer's
see
Strike, which we're getting to in a minute. Our movie. That's our movie. No one can write it.
We can take it.
And we can sell it.
Howdy, 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 y'all. Normally, we bring you our not sponsors, but today we are excited to talk about an actual sponsor. Hydrate. By Good Anya. You can go to goodanyaorganic.com to get Hydrate, which is an all-organic hydration powder supplement. It contains only natural organic ingredients and no sugar at all. It's made of lemon juice, coconut water, stevia, and organic sea minerals. This is the best hydration product I personally have ever used. I take it every single day when I wake up and after my sauna, and I feel incredible. Completely organic ingredients. A good friend of ours introduced us to this, and I can't go a day without it. So get yourself some Good Anya. Get yourself hydrated.
Look, it's not the 1920s anymore. Everybody has a business or a startup of some sort, whether it's a side project, whether you've ditched the silver spoon and are going all in on your side hustle to make it a full-blown business, or you have a small business already, but you've hit a plateau in growth and you're trying to find different ways to turn your marketing dollars into legitimate revenue. Well, Creators Collective is here for you. They are a full-service marketing agency offering marketing, branding, logo design, copy, video, social media management, anything custom to your business or your startup or your side hustle that will help you grow your bottom line, grow your brand reach, and just feel like you have the best dang company ever because your marketing assets are frankly better than everybody else in the game. So what you need to do right now is go to creatorscollective.us and contact them to schedule a call and find how Creators Collective can help you grow your business for the long term. That's Creators Collective. Schedule a call and just grow your freaking business with marketing that freaking works. All right.
Anyway. Speaking of significant people, do you want to hear about our Texas badass of the day?
Yes. Texas badass of the Texas bidet.
Texas bidet. So, this person played a big role in our childhood. He
okay.
was born in 1955 in San Angelo, Texas.
Barney?
And no, he's not related to us. His name is Maximus Lucado.
Max Lucado.
Okay. Was born in San Angelo, Texas in 1955.
Nice.
Grew up in Andrews, Texas,
yeah,
which is something that like is kind of cool. We have a few people claim to fame, you know,
couple,
that type of thing.
Couple.
If you remember growing up, Mom used to read You Are Special to
yeah.
us. One of my favorite children's books mm-hmm. of all time.
Inspired my children's book. Mm-hmm. Like, so good.
So Max Lucado grows up Texan. He decides he wants to be a lawyer.
Okay.
Right? So he starts going to Abilene Christian.
Nice.
And partway through decides that he actually wants to go into, you know, the pastoral services.
Yeah, which in Texas is like
anyway. Especially when you're going to that school, like it's kind of a thing.
Synonymous.
Like. So he figures out that he's got to take 2 more years of like intensive Bible study and okay. then go on a mission and serve yeah. for 2 years. Him and his wife end up moving to Brazil at some point.
Ah.
And they spend some time in Brazil doing, you know, he's preaching, mm-hmm. he's writing books, they're, you know, living life. Mm-hmm. He eventually moves back to Texas.
Okay.
Where he ends up in San Antonio.
All right.
And he now has, what's the church's name?
River Oak.
River Oak.
I think.
Yeah.
Or Oak Tree.
Something
Oak Hill.
Like that.
Oak is in
I'm
there.
Trying not to use notes.
Yeah. We are not using
we're not
notes
using
now.
Notes anymore.
You know how I said Anderson family yeah, a minute yeah. ago? I don't think that's the family
fair
that
enough,
held
fair
up.
Enough.
But we're not
we're
using notes.
Figure, we're not using notes.
We are going to use notes for Texas Update.
Yes, we're going to have to. So Max Lucado moves back to San Angelo, moves to San Antonio,
yeah.
where he becomes one of the coolest pastors of all time,
yeah.
I think.
Okay.
He's very much not non-denominational, but not dogmatic.
Yeah.
The way his preaching style is very free-flowing, story-based. He teaches from the Bible. He teaches the lessons, but he also weaves in current, like current lessons, which I think is really, really valuable. He's published over 100 books.
Yeah. How many books has this guy written?
Over 100.
Do you think he's written all of them, or do you think at this point there's actually a team of...
I think he's written all of them. I really do. I think he's got a hardcore editor, but I think he writes all of them.
Okay.
Because, like, I think once you get into the flow of it, and you can attest to this as a writer yourself, like, if you have a practice of writing, it's not too hard to expand.
That's actually a good point. That's,
so if you're a pastor and you're already, you know, writing...
Yeah, you're writing sermons. Yeah, yeah. And then, well, especially for pastors, half of their sermons become books. Like,
yeah, they're like, well, every sermon is like the intro to a book.
Yeah, almost. And then if you do a series, say you do eight... Eight sermons of a series.
And you just expand each sermon.
Expand each sermon.
If now you have 15 pages, you've got a 200-page book.
Yeah. Is that the math on that?
No, it's not. Okay. But I'm like... It'd be 160 pages or something.
200
but
yeah, plus the appendix, plus all the things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he has written so many books, though.
He's written so many books.
Yeah, and...
Good for him.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I also love that he's one of those... There's this group of older pastors that, especially through the pandemic, like, had to try to figure out how to use Instagram Reels and do the weird pastor influencer thing. But instead of it being hype beast the way that young pastors are, like... The tight pants and the nice beard. It's like these saggy old guys like Max Lucado that are like, we're going to talk about the Bible today. And like the quality's bad. And
Jesus said
it's backlit. So you can barely see.
They're like in front of a window. Yeah. And they're just dark faced.
Great.
Talking about the joys of being saved by our Lord and Savior.
I wish we had a Jamie so I could say pull it up. But there was also a just... Bouncing off Max Lucado really quick. Did you have... Wait, am I interrupting?
No, you're not. Like, that's... In 2007, he retired from... He stepped down from being the lead pastor. And
yeah, one of the only pastors to ever step down due to no controversies at all.
One of the... I like how in every church, as a pastor, you're basically on Survivor. At any point in time, the congregation could vote you off the island.
Just be like, no, thank you.
No, we're good.
Yeah, Max is one of the only ones to ever be able to just go, I'm tired.
I'm tired.
Tapping out.
Bye, guys.
I'm going to go write books.
Yeah. He's just like, he's one of those guys who is a stand-up person.
Yeah.
And never seems to have done anything even remotely controversial. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And has written some of our favorite books.
I know.
So I wanted to highlight that. And he grew up in our hometown.
I know. Which, he was the center for Principal Leach.
Yeah, I know, right?
Which is so weird.
It's weird.
One ended up fat and one ended up skinny, but they were switched.
And like, I just like thinking that if we ever meet Max Lucado, we can be like Buddy Stay Fingers and be like Buddy Stay Fingers.
Even that, how many times did you eat at Buddy's?
Three times.
Yeah, I think I ate there twice. Yeah. That place was in business because of other people.
Because
other
of towns. Not us. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, old pastors.
Old really pastors.
Quick. I wish we. I'll show it to you in a minute.
Oh, please do.
But there, Louis Giglio is another.
Because that's a name.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, he's a great. He's a great pastor, but he's an older pastor in Atlanta. He founded Passion City Church. Okay. And then there's Andy Stanley, who's a Nashville guy
and has two first names.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like they're probably in their 60s.
Sure.
And Andy's dad was also a very influential pastor, and I'm sorry I forgot his name.
Sure.
And he passed away recently.
Dr. Stanley.
And I think it was Dr. Stanley actually. Mm-hmm. And this is showing how messed up my sense of humor has gotten. Because there's something old, just old people posting on the internet is just funnier than young people
doing.
It
is,
And Louis Giglio posted a picture from the funeral where it's him and Andy like arm over arm smiling in front of the open casket.
That's amazing.
And it's one of the funniest pictures I've ever seen because it's just these two old megachurch pastors like there's a dead guy behind them. Just right. Not like we're the casket is 20 feet behind us. The casket is right here.
That's one of the funny things I think about pastors in general is they see so many dead people. They see almost as many dead people as undertakers. So there's a certain, at a certain point, familiarity breeds, you know,
just like some like numbness comfort, almost. Right? Yeah.
Well, so whenever we see a dead body, we're like, oh my God, a dead body. Whenever a pastor sees a dead body, they're like, cool, Tuesday.
And it's great because they're old, but they're dressed kind of cool.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Am I not wrong? Like, that's a funny picture.
That's a funny picture.
And that's one of that guy's dads.
I don't know if you can zoom in. That's zoom hilarious. In on that. That is hilarious.
That is one of the funniest pictures I've ever seen. Dude, I sent this to
It's like, oh my God, my friend, let's take a picture.
Yeah, let's take it. What other time should we take a picture than right now?
I wish the casket was open.
It would be funnier.
It'd be funnier.
And they're smiling the way old guys smile, you know, like the muscles are weak. So
yeah,
they can't,
so they're trying to kill
it. Because you and I, as young guys, whereas when you get older, you're kind of like, I'm glad you I sent this to some friends of mine.
Yeah, who didn't think it was funny.
I think they were like, okay. And I just felt alone because I thought, this is funny. Well, this is objectively funny.
That's what you get for not sending it to me.
Fair point. Now that we're talking about a pastor, I'm like, oh, it's relevant.
Oh, it's relevant now.
Yeah, I never want to walk in a room and be like, has anyone seen Louis Giglio's picture next to the dead guy?
I mean, why not, man?
I feel like
you could walk into any Starbucks in Fort Worth and get a pretty good response from that.
That's true. You know what? I had men's group tonight. I'll throw it out.
Throw it out to men's group
and see if I fit in or not.
I love it, man. Just remember to like bring your kettlebell and talk about men in the arena. You know?
Yeah, true. Well, it's not that kind of thing. Different men's group.
Different men's group.
This will be a game called Do You Guys Like This or Not?
Do you guys like this?
This will be a game called How Far Do Y'all Take That?
Right. This game's called Gunner's a Little Different.
Yeah. You want to do a Texas update?
I do want to do a Texas update.
Are you going from memory or are you going?
I'm gonna look at it really quick and then I'm going to go from memory you go first.
Yeah, I'll go first. All right, Texas. Former Navy SEALs Dan Crenshaw and David Goggins, whose Men in Black remake is going to be really awkward, have been going back and forth on social media for the last few weeks, while all the other Navy SEALs watch and just hope they can see eye to eye.
The fourth annual Gathering of Kyles will be held in Kyle, Texas on May 21st as they attempt to break the Guinness World Record for whitest record ever.
And the KKK is real upset about it.
Currently, the record is held by Ivans.
Is this a real thing? Ivans.
Yeah.
Northeast. Yeah.
And
I guess
is the fourth time the Kyles have tried.
Dude, the Kyles are going hard.
Kyles go hard.
Go hard. All right, Texas update. Everyone's favorite Texas brand, ERCOT, announced that there will be a lot of brownouts throughout this summer. Said all the Lake Travis partygoers, we're way ahead of you.
In a shocking piece of accurate journalism, Texas Monthly dispels rumors of a serial killer dumping bodies in Town Lake. So to all the Californians who are on the fence about moving to Austin, come on in. The water's great, according to Texas Monthly.
Yeah, accurate reporting at all times, dorks. Anyway.
That is going to bite us in the ass.
I can't wait to never win an award from them. Liquid death.
Dude, do you think we're going to get Bump Steer of the Year next year? I feel like we should be in the running.
No such thing as bad publicity.
Right? Well, except if it's from Texas Monthly, who's going to read it?
Yeah, well, good point. Who's going to read Texas Monthly except for the people who work there and their parents?
And us who constantly make fun of it for some reason.
Yeah. Well, because they just are...
Because they betrayed Texas,
back to just really quick.
Just really quick.
And it is a good segue into the writer's strike.
Just a segue.
They did a whole piece on...
Yeah.
People are freaking out about the rumors of a serial killer killing people on Rainy Street, throwing them in the river.
Right.
And they cited, you know, the rise of true crime podcasts as part of the problem. Texas Monthly has two true crime podcasts on their net. And there was no acknowledgement of Tom Brown's body had something to do.
Right.
You know, and not saying that Texas Monthly is responsible, but if you're going to cite that, at least own that you also have true crime podcasts.
It's equivalent to
not like you haven't benefited from the trend.
It's as though you're polishing your AR-15 saying that gun control is a problem, you know,
right,
in front of a school. You're just like, yeah, we just need better gun control laws.
We just need to raise our kids better, you know
while
you're beating up your child. That is journalism in a nutshell.
I mean,
honestly.
in a way. Yeah. And that's, I don't know.
Actually, I'm going to, because we're going to talk about the writer's strike.
Yeah, we're going to talk
about the writer's strike. But you didn't look up the picture of the Giannis guy, right? Of the guy who asked
I didn't look the picture up.
Okay, I'll look it up.
So, yeah, because we were talking about Giannis answering the same question for the second year in the row.
Yeah.
And just, like, how disrespectful the question was.
I'm curious for you. Do you view this season as a failure?
Oh, my God.
He handled it so much better than probably anyone else
than you
could
have.
Well, me specifically. I mean, especially the part where he's answering, he goes... I don't want to make it personal. So, I mean, even Giannis Antetokounmpo was almost like, I'm going to put this guy on blast.
Yeah.
Start talking. I got to look this guy up.
Well, because if I remember correctly, I watched it, it was mostly just like, hey, man, why are you asking me a loaded question like this?
Yeah.
I just played a good game. Like, we didn't lose. Like, we're not number 50 in the league or whatever. It's not like we played badly.
Yeah, especially he was like, so all of those seasons that Michael Jordan didn't win a finals,
those were bad seasons? Go?
I'm trying to find him.
That's fine, man. I'm assuming he looks exactly how he looks in my head.
Yeah, honestly, yes. Yeah, you know? Just like a short, he's a short, fat, white dude.
Sure.
That's a basketball journalist yeah. that gets to ask a 7-foot freak athlete.
In the failure?
Well, like, and not only that, you get to ask him that and be safe.
Yeah, like you he know? Can't, like, he can't hit you. It's crazy.
He's not allowed to.
Like, imagine, is there a law against punching? Well, I guess it's assault.
It's assault. You know,
that's wild. It's can we
there's definitely that? if he asked him the question he immediately like hit him
yeah
then there's like levels to assault where it's not yeah. it's like oh it was a crime of passion.
Yeah, also back anyway. To Michael Jordan probably would say those seasons were a failure to be fair
he would just be like what seasons.
I wasn't playing this.
He's like, I don't know what you mean.
You mean when I was playing baseball? When
mean,
I wasn't
you
there?
You mean practice? You mean my practice seasons?
You mean our warm-up seasons?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, writer's strike. Mm-hmm. Writers are on strike.
Writers striking.
And you know more about this.
I know a little bit more because it's a little bit more
of
my world.
You're privy to that world.
So the WGA, the Writers Guild of America, enters into negotiations with yeah. the studios every, I think it's 3 years, but like whenever the contract expires, yeah. they go through and they're like, all right, what's working, what's not, what yeah. do we need to negotiate?
And this is how unions on? Work.
This is
right?
how unions
like you're
work.
You're always having to you're
negotiating
better working conditions.
Well, and it's necessary because left to their own devices, studios will ignore inflation. They'll mm-hmm. kind of do whatever they want insofar yeah. as like working practices. Mm-hmm. And what's happened is writing is one of the most important parts of storytelling.
Well, you don't have a story without the writing.
It's kind of the point, right? Yeah. So classically, writers will get to a point where the working conditions don't meet
yeah.
livable needs in Los Angeles.
And that mostly means pay. When we say it working mostly conditions, means, that means but that, mostly that's not their pay, all
it means,
right?
But it's mostly what it means.
Okay.
So
like, it's not like the bagels are stale.
Right.
Right.
They're not negotiating for better food. They're negotiating for better pay. They're negotiating for like better health care a lot yeah. of times. They're mm-hmm. negotiating for better working conditions yeah. and what I mean by that is if you go down because the WGA is very transparent
yeah
they're like these are what we were negotiating on yeah. this was the studio response to these things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things they wanted is whenever a show is being written before it gets picked up mm-hmm. before it gets greenlit to mm-hmm. make more seasons
yeah
it's pre-greenlit so they're writing
yellow lit.
So they're writing without certainty of a job next season, right?
Okay. So they're working on season two.
They're working on season one, and they're writing season one.
Okay.
But they don't know if the show's going to get picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of writers, like a lot of actors, have like agents, and there's like different things going mm-hmm. on. And as a writer, you want to like do your own work, but yeah. you want to be employed.
Mm-hmm.
What will happen is the studio will like, they want to pay you by the day,
mm-hmm.
is what they want. Mm-hmm. They want to say, you worked this day, you make this much money for this
yeah, for that day.
Day of work.
Yeah.
And the reason that is bad is mm-hmm. severalfold. One, there it causes like the writers a really difficult time
yeah.
paying bills.
Yeah.
Because often in a writer's room, you'll work like 10 days
mm-hmm.
and then like maybe you'll go work on a different show or like yeah. they'll swap you out. Like you work an episode.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantee of employment.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're trying to do is make it so that on a pre-greenlit show, you're guaranteed X amount of like working time.
Yeah.
Right. That they're going to pay you for this amount yeah. of time. Mm-hmm. And that,
which is going to, your creativity gets freed up.
Right.
You're because not worried about getting evicted.
And there's still plenty yeah. of like within creativity, you need deadlines and things like yeah. that. Otherwise you'll never get anything mm-hmm. done. Because of the nature of TV, you have to submit episodes. So like you yeah. have that fire on your butt mm-hmm. to like keep going.
Yeah.
And for part of this, it's important because it allows you that latitude to yeah. pay your bills while you're working on mm-hmm. shows that haven't been picked up.
Yeah.
Another thing they're working on is negotiating streaming and digital. Yeah. Like,
because they just haven't figured that out.
They haven't figured
right?
it out yet. Yeah. And they're working on like residuals and writers' rooms for those.
Yeah.
Because what they're doing a lot of times for mm-hmm. these like streaming shows is not doing a classic writers' room.
Yeah.
So again, like look it up on the WGA website or on Instagram. Mm-hmm. They've got all their points listed out.
Yeah.
One of the most interesting things
mm-hmm.
is one of their negotiation points was guarantees that AI won't take a writer's job.
Okay.
Because they're trying to figure out how to like make AI write scripts. Of yeah. course they are.
Yeah. Partially because it's fun.
Yeah. Partially because it's fun, but also yeah. because the job of a studio is to maximize
their earnings.
Yeah. Not the writer's earnings.
Yeah.
From a studio perspective, a writer is a cost.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is hilarious.
It's funny.
In the sense that like, well, you don't have a show without the writer.
If you take nothing away, take this away. Writers make 2% of the total gross of a product.
Mm-hmm.
They are responsible for you decide however much that percentage is based mm-hmm. on the writing of the product.
Yeah.
I would argue it's more than 2%.
Probably, but you know, counterpoint. Most of these writers like trust fund babies from Harvard? Like,
that's part of the issue, mm-hmm. right? Is the working conditions and the wages are such that the majority of people who can stick it out in the profession have money coming in outside, are trust fund kids, do have some type of endowment that allows them the latitude to work on these projects and not worry about how much they're getting paid. And that's a problem. Because what the Writers Guild wants to do is make sure that if you want to be a writer, if you want to work in TV, there's a path to a career where you will be able to raise a family, be able to have
a
lot.
Well, if there's like, better pay, it won't just be a bunch of trust fund dorks.
So if you want more creative stories that are from different walks of life, you have to make it so that you can make a living if you don't already have a giant savings account.
Yeah.
And that's part of the work the Writers Guild is doing. And I do think it's important because you go back to like 2007, 2008, when that when one of the most recent writer strikes happened. That's the reason reality TV pervades the space is because they were gone.
Well, because who do they bring in when all the writers go on strike?
People who aren't in the union. And so they, what happens is...
Does that mean they're bad writers, though? What if there's a lot of really good writers out there that aren't part of the union?
So what happens is, based on the contracts, the the studios can't hire writers that aren't WGA. You know what I mean? WGA can bring on certain like people about to be in the union. Anyway, it gets a little complicated. But the reason that we had this dearth of reality TV is because nobody was writing.
So they just brought in a bunch of trash people.
And they had a lot of like producers write scripts that were out that couldn't be considered writing. That was like outlines. And that's why Real Housewives and all these things
Jersey Shore
exist.
Ideas became shows, not scripts.
They were like, well, because they couldn't legally write scripts.
It's not even a capability.
It would be scabbing.
Legally.
It's like legally you're not allowed to.
That's weird. That's not weird.
It's how the rule, it's the law.
But okay. But also now with like YouTube and OnlyFans and Patreon, can't a lot of these writers just like get together, write a good script and make their own stuff without the guild? Or do you need the guild?
Like, you don't necessarily need the guild. And that does happen on some level. Yeah. But like if you want to produce a show, it's not even necessarily about the guild. It's about the coin purse that the studios hold. And that's why it's negotiations. You have this idea, right? Let's because Breaking Bad came out of the writer strike. Like he wrote that after the strike.
Meaning the strike was over or
when
during?
It was over.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And like you couldn't make Breaking Bad. Without millions of dollars of capital.
True. Yeah.
It made way more than that. Right? Because it was good. And that's kind of what they're arguing for is like, writers need
stable,
stable
income.
And the way it is
and
right
I
now.
And I do like the side of if writers get paid more, less dorks are going to be writers. And I like that.
Right. And whenever you go down the line items, it's not even about the writers getting paid more, really. It's about consistency.
Well, it's about like guaranteed fair compensation. Well,
and
right?
it's about guaranteed employment for periods of time.
Yeah.
It's much less like we want more money. It's like we want a fair amount of money over a fair amount
over,
of time.
Over, like, if because I write.
If a studio could get away with it, they would pay one writer for one day and then like
why is that on the other side of this? Why are studios like this? I don't understand that.
That's the way
because you need them. Like,
have you ever dealt with an uncreative person?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. So whenever you're dealing with somebody who's money driven,
yeah,
they don't understand a creative process. Yeah. Like they don't actually know the difference between good and bad.
Yeah.
Like they can read one script and another script. One could be terrible. One could be good and be like, I don't know the difference.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't tell you why it's a good thing that, you know, Walter White struggled about like about the first time he cooked meth. They don't understand why it's so significant when he shaves his head and puts on that. Like they don't understand those nuances. The way a like a creative
a writer does. Yeah.
Because it's not their job.
Yeah.
The problem is every studio head or person wants their like wants their fingerprint on it. So they feel like they should
like they want their name on it.
And at the same time, it is their job to like minimize cost.
Yeah.
And for some reason, and you know, to make it personal, like I got let go and from my job as a copywriter.
Yeah.
And last week, the PM reached out to me and said, hey, man, you know,
we need writers.
And I was like, cool, I'll do some freelance work for you because I need the money.
Yeah.
And I get into the software to see what the assignment is. And he attaches and it says in the thing, so I've been cleared to bring you on for certain assignments. Here's the AI attempt. So I was fired and replaced with AI.
And now brought back on.
To fix the AI.
Yeah, that's...
Which is what people who are money-driven look at. They're like, okay, well, here's a cost that's kind of a lot. Yeah. We can just eliminate that and replace it with AI.
Yeah. And then they get into
Seth
it.
Seth is this much money a month. Yeah, AI is this much money a month.
Zero money a month, right. Depending on what tool you use. Mm-hmm. That's messed up.
It's messed up, but that's how they think. And so the reason you have unions and negotiations is to circumvent that.
Yeah.
And try and get to a place where it all makes sense.
Yeah.
Because, like, obviously the writers are going to want a situation that's best for them. Studios are going to want a situation that's best for them. Yeah. You've got to meet in the middle. Mm-hmm. And it just becomes clear when you go down the negotiation, because what happens is they meet to negotiate, and if they can't reach an agreement, the writers strike. That's how it works.
Yeah.
They couldn't reach an agreement. So you look through and you're like, well, what did they negotiate on?
Yeah.
On almost all of the items, the studios refused to they either rejected the proposal outright or refused to negotiate.
Yeah. Which is crazy to me.
It's so dumb.
If just from a, I don't care if you're a money guy or a creative person, from a people standpoint.
Yeah.
Actually, as... On the money side.
Yeah.
I don't understand how a money person can't understand or wrap their head around, like, okay, stable working environment is going to equal a better product.
Yeah.
How does that not... I don't understand how that doesn't make sense to somebody.
Because most of the people dealing with that are short term. They look at the short term. They're like, how can I boost the revenue and boost the stock this quarter?
Yeah.
It's not a long-term thing.
That's, I don't
know. It's really dumb. It's short-sighted, but that's how they've kind of been trained.
That's just how it just works all the
time. Well, like, I think in their defense, it's
I hate that I'm siding with dorks on this.
It's like,
that's how messed up studio heads are. Like, I'm with the writers here. Like, strike all you want, make better products, get paid more.
All the best writers are the opposite of dorks.
That's true.
That just to put it out there, like,
fair.
Like Michael Sutter, who wrote, you know, did Sons of Anarchy.
David Cross.
Well,
he's dorky,
but like,
he's a prolific writer.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
Taylor Sheridan,
J.D. Dillard. Like,
yeah, dude, J.D. Dillard is such a good writer.
He's such a good writer. Yeah, yeah.
I want to get him on this show.
I know.
I mean, again, Jonah Hill's dorky, but
like, dude, Crazy Life Story,
Surf,
Skate. Like, yeah, come on, great. He's not a dork.
He's an incredible writer.
There's like a difference between dork and nerd. And
yeah, okay, there's the distinguish I need to make is there's a difference between journalist and actual writer.
Oh my
God. He did it. He went there.
Oh man. We have an axe to grind.
It's grinded.
You should probably let it go.
I'm letting it go.
We're on air. You have it right here. Gunner's letting go.
I am letting go of I don't even know what it is.
The journalistic hatred.
The journalistic hate. Yeah, it's bad. It's unnecessary. It's childish. I'm the immature one. I apologize to anyone who's not a journalist that's offended by this.
Sure.
And I'm sorry.
And if you are a journalist, just grow up hair.
Fair. And that's what you have made me come to. Yeah. We're watching Mind Change in real time.
Yeah, sure. Hey, man.
I'm realizing, writers aren't dorks.
Sure.
They're just really creative people.
For the most part.
Deserve better working conditions. What? So that we can have shows.
So we have shows that we like.
Breaking Bad. And Yellowstone.
And Ted Lasso.
And Ted Lasso, which...
I know. But see, that's kind of my point.
I spelled it with two S's.
Oh my God.
Just saying, that horrible episode was worth that
joke.
Yeah.
To be fair, I thought I fooled them. Spelled it with two S's.
So good. Yeah.
Just that, like
that
and
that silent joke where Jamie like looks at that guy at Will's phone.
Yeah.
So nice.
Oh my gosh.
I still love Ted. We said it already.
I know. Yeah.
If it Game of Thrones, bad.
Yeah.
We'll still love it. So what do you think? How is the writer's strike going to end? Because is it just they don't come back until something changes?
It's
going
to end the same way it always ends. The studios are going to cave to like the biggest parts because they have to.
Well, because they'll realize, we don't have a show now.
Well, they're going to run the numbers.
Yeah.
And they're going to go, okay, every day that we don't have a script costs us this much. Giving them what they want costs us this much. It's a simple math equation.
Yeah. So people still aren't going to come into their view it's not going to be about, if we treat people better and give them a better, better environment, we will have a better product.
It's going to be a math equation.
That sucks.
It's dumb. I don't like it.
Studio heads are dorks. They're dorks.
Yeah.
The studio heads are dorks. They're dorks. Writers are cool and awesome. And the studio heads are dorks. They're math, Harvard, Yale dorks. I hate them.
Agreed.
I hate them.
Bye, y'all.